The following is a production of Omnis.tv.
Today on the show, I cover this week's NFL games, college football top 25, Major League Baseball recap, the top movies at the box office, Pearl Jam celebrating their 20th anniversary, and much, much more, only on Unsigned, happening now. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Unsigned. My name is Ryan. Thanks for hanging out with me here on a Tuesday night. Hopefully, everybody had a great weekend. A lot of sports. You know, NFL kicking off its regular season, of course. College football we're going to cover tonight. Major League Baseball. But before I get into all that, obviously, this past Sunday was the 10th anniversary of 9/11. And a couple comments I would like to make about 9/11. Obviously, everybody remembers that day and the tragedy that it is. Now, first comment I would like to make is this. The NFL and how they put together their ceremonies, amazing job. Class act with the embroidered ribbons on the jerseys, the huge flags at every single stadium. Wonderful, wonderful job by the NFL. I think they did very well. Now, when I got up that morning this past September 11th, I wrote something, and I wanted to share it with everybody here tonight. Now, these are my own words. I'd like to go ahead and share that with you, and then we'll get on with the show. Now, remembering those who lost, we lost 10 years ago, I would also like to say that we should not only remember the pain and fear that we all felt and how we united as a country as well. It has been 10 long years, and I'm thankful for the men and women who defend us and give us the things that we sometimes take for granted every day. 10 years later, this country has been through a lot. And let us take that fear and that pain and that anger and not let it be the only thing that we recall. Let us take that unity, use that energy and the energy of those lost on that day to heal and better the country that we do all love, which is the United States of America. The next 10 years, should we flourish and look back, not in anger or fear, but how we really overcame the hardest moment in our nation's recent history and the hard times that have followed. I remember 9/11, 2001, and those lost that day in Pennsylvania, the Pentagon, the towers, the first responders. Those are my thoughts. Now, let's go on and get on with the show. NFL football, the kickoff. We did our pigskin pick'ems. We got Sean on the line who did our pigskin pick'ems with us last week. And I have to say, Sean, you bested me. I went 9-7. I believe you went 10-6. Is that right?
Yes.
So
yep.
Now
10-6 and 9-7.
Yeah.
Well, how did Bosley do? Did you get his?
Morris Bosley Racing ended up 9-7 as well. So we ended up in a tie, and I'm going to do his picks here in a little bit. He sent them to me in an email earlier today. We had the Lions Buccaneers game. I went with the Buccaneers. Obviously a game they really should have won. I thought their lack of a running game really hurt them in that game. The Bears, I thought, looked really good. I had the Falcons. I thought they would put a better showing on, but the Bears definitely looked the part. Now, heading into this week, Sean, a lot of big games. We got Atlanta. Excuse me. Let's start with this. Let's do the Cleveland Browns, who were a disappointment. I'm a Browns fan. They basically choked that one away on Sunday against the Bengals. Now, the Browns go to Indianapolis. What is your take on that? I'm going to say the Browns are going to bounce back and find a way to win. They're a young, hungry team. Bad taste in their mouth in front of the home fans. Who you got in that one?
As being from Northeast Ohio, I'd like to see that happen. But I went with Indy at home. I just even though they don't have Peyton, they still have everybody else. I marked that as my most unwatchable game of the week. I don't know. I'll probably have to watch it, but that's where I'll go. I'll take Indy there.
Well, all I can say is that I hope the Browns do get Scary Collins and not Kerry Collins this coming Sunday. Now, another game right. I think is really going to be entertaining is you have the Chicago Bears and New Orleans Saints. This is the Saints' home opener against the Bears again, who really took it to the Falcons last week. The Saints, obviously, in that that heartbreak loss at Lambeau, opening up the season. I'm going to take the Saints in this one. I think even with the loss of Marcus Colston, I think they learned a lot about themselves in that hard fought loss against the Packers. Where do you see the Bears and Saints game this Sunday?
Well, I like the Saints also. I think they'll be a little bit more hungry than the Bears. The Bears' defense is tough, though. They got to keep them off of Drew, and they'll be fine.
Yeah, I agree.
Peppers had a big game for him the other day.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how the Saints' D-line holds up with that Mike Martz attack in with Chicago. But I think the Saints prevail. I think they just have too much firepower. Now we have the Packers heading to Carolina to play the Panthers. Now, Cam Newton had a breakout game last week. With this 3-4 defense of Don Capers and, Clay Matthews, A.J. Hawk, and B.J. Raji in the middle, I doubt that he's going to enjoy the same luxury that he did last week. I'm going Packers all the way on this one.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I like the Pack. Yeah, they'll get to Cam Newton a lot more than Arizona did last week.
Yeah, I have a feeling Cam Newton is going to be introduced to A.J. Hawk and Clay Matthews quite a bit next weekend. Now, here's a game that when you originally saw this game on the schedule a couple weeks ago, you would have been like, Raiders-Bills. Now, all of a sudden, the Bills go to KC and trounce KC, a game that I thought the Bills would win. I didn't think they would win the fashion that they did. But and the Raiders' front four on defense last night looked really good. I'm taking the Bills in this one. I think that the Bills coming home to Buffalo, they run the ball. They got a lot of nice weapons. I think that defense is much improved. I'm taking the Bills over the Raiders.
I took the Bills also. I thought they looked very strong on both sides of the ball against Kansas City. Their defense, they lost Puzzlesny, but they got the guy from the Packers. Can't remember his name offhand, playing linebacker for them.
Nick, I think it's Nick Roach who was on the outside. Yeah, there you go, Barnett. Yeah, that's right.
Barnett.
Yeah, him and Barnett and a couple with Sean Merriweather has really bolstered that front seven in Buffalo. Now, here's a game that's interesting. You got the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Jets. The Jets lucky to win Sunday night on NBC. I mean, lucky. Thank you, Tony Romo, and I'll get into that later tonight. But I'm taking the Jets on this one. I think they bounce back. I think they really have to find a way to get Sean Green in the running game and get that really rolling to set up the pass with the run and give Sanchez a chance to really open up late in the game. But I'm taking the Jets over the Jaguars.
I'm with you on that one also. I got the Jets. We got a great gift from the Cowboys. I'm a Cowboy fan, and that was terrible. Dallas just seems to find the way to snatch defeat out of the jaws of victory every week ever since the beginning of last year. I don't know what they have going on there, but I'm taking the Jets in that one.
Yeah, I think that Dallas really they have some nice weapons there, and I think it's just a matter of them. You get the ball, with the lead that they had in that game, I think you just got to keep it on the ground and try to pound it in with either DeMarco Murray or, Felix Jones. I get a host of running backs there in that backfield. I think you just got to try to pound it in first down, second down, three down. If you don't get it, kick the three. You're already up anyway. Ravens coming to Nashville this week. I tell you what, the Ravens looked amazing. I mean, they absolutely decimated, destroyed Pittsburgh, which I love to see. Pittsburgh, again, I'll get into that a little bit here on the show, but I think the Titans, they're kind of where the Browns are. They're kind of on that cusp where they're starting that rebuilding process and really starting to go young. And I think Ray Rice and Joe Flacco and anyone else on that offense, Anquan Boldin, the list goes on and on. I think they shred Tennessee in Tennessee this week.
I'm going with Baltimore there also. Jake Locker might want to be studying hard. He might get a chance to play this week. they might put Hassel back out if he doesn't move a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. Hasselbeck, I said a couple weeks on the show, Hasselbeck, you know, a guy whose body has really kind of fallen apart on him the last couple of years. I'd be surprised if he makes a full 16 games. I really will. And Jake Locker, you know, the guy was pretty good at Washington. They didn't have, really have a lot of good pieces around him in that football program in Washington. And he did not look ready. I think he's a year or two away from being ready. Moving on, we've got the Kansas City Chiefs. We got the Detroit Lions. I wasn't convinced last week. I was like, you know what, Detroit Rock City, I don't know if they can go to Tampa and beat Tampa. Sure enough, they do. Calvin Johnson had a monster game. Stafford looked amazing. You keep him upright, he looks really good. I'm going with the Lions. As bad as the Chiefs looked, they looked absolutely lost and confused last week, and I think more of the same going to Detroit over those Lions.
Yeah, I got Detroit as well there. I think somebody forgot to tell Haley and his bunch that regular season started last week. They were terrible.
Defense that was, you know, really up and coming last year. Then they lose Eric Berry for the season to an ACL injury. I think the Chiefs are definitely heading in the wrong direction offensively and defensively. Now, here's an interesting matchup to me. Arizona Cardinals against the Washington Redskins. Again, the Skins get game two at home. Really hot, tough place to play. And you know what? I think Shanahan is really going back to his roots here. Shanahan playing just simple football. Run the football, play solid defense, that zone blocking scheme. I said a couple weeks ago, Tim Hightower, when they plucked him out of Arizona and put him, Tim Hightower in the backfield under Shanahan's scheme, regardless of who's playing quarterback, they got good Rex Grossman last week. If they get good Rex Grossman this week, I think the Skins can beat the Cardinals.
Washington as well. I don't even think they need a good Rex Grossman. They just need to manage the game, Rex Grossman, and don't throw the picks and stay out of trouble and keep them in third and shorts, and they'll be fine.
Yeah,
Washington's,
I agree.
Got a strong team.
Yeah, the defense looked good with Brian Arakpo in his third season, and the rookie Kerrigan from Purdue looked really good as well. Here's one. The Vikings, man, they looked rough in San Diego last week. I think Tampa Bay is going to come up there in the dome and do exactly that and rough them up. Donovan McNabb did not look comfortable at all with that offense. I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers get on the right track and get in the win column next week.
I went with Minnesota in this one. I think you're going to give them a big dose of Peterson. That's the only way I think Minnesota can win, to keep the ball on the ground and hope their defense holds up.
Yeah, that's where me and you differ. I'll be interesting to see how that game plays out. I agree with you on the Peterson thing. I think if the Vikings can find a way to stay above on the down and distance with Peterson and just, you know, hand the ball off to him 20-some-odd times, and he's going to break one for a touchdown or two against that young defensive front. But something about the Buccaneers, I really like that team. And if those, you know, Claiborne and Daquan Bowers and, you know, all those young guys they got on the defensive line start coming together, Tampa Bay is going to be very, very stout. Now, the Seahawks, the poor Seahawks, they lost in San Francisco last week, and then they get the draw, lucky draw week two. They get to go to Pittsburgh after Pittsburgh gets humbled last week big time. I expect a completely different Pittsburgh team. I expect them to not try to throw the ball over the place. I expect them to come out and, you know, blitz the heck out of the Tavares Jackson, get some turnovers, and run the football. I think the Steelers are going to beat up on the Seahawks this week.
Yeah, I definitely think the Steelers will be in a bad mood for this one. I think Harrison and the boys will be in the backfield more than Seattle's running backs will be. I'll take Pittsburgh big in this one.
Yeah, it does not look good for Marshawn Lynch. So if you got him on your fantasy team, you might want to consider other options at running back if you have Marshawn Lynch on your team. Now, here's an interesting one. Cowboys heading out to San Francisco. I tell you, the Cowboys doing a lot of traveling early in the year. They go all the way to New York. They lose in a heartbreak. Now they're traveling all the way to the other side of the coast to play San Francisco in San Francisco. How about them Cowboys? Issues in the secondary. I really question their mental toughness overall, Tony Romo included. I'm saying 0-2 start for Jerry, and the axis of Jerry's world is tilted a little bit. Jerry Jones, his head might just pop right off out of the press box if they lose this game in San Fran this week.
Yeah, who are you taking?
I'm taking. I'm taking the Niners. I'm taking the Niners.
Are you taking that? I took the Cowboys. Well, the thing with the doubt there, special teams need to hold up. Ted Ginn Jr. had a huge game for San Francisco last week. Just hoping Dallas doesn't find a way to give it away at the end.
Be interesting. The 49ers with Harbaugh as the coach, a little bit different mentality. I'm still not sold on the quarterback, Alex Smith, but, he managed the game. They didn't, drop back and throw it too many times. They hand off to Frank Gore, and, they found a way to eke that thing out in a pretty much a sloppy ball game against Seattle. Now, here's another one. This was part of a Monday night game, the Denver Broncos. Now you got the Bengals coming to Denver. This has potential to be a very, very ugly football game. You have the Broncos fans chanting Tebow, Denver Broncos creating turnovers against, I guess Bradkowski is going to be quarterback there. I'm taking the Broncos just in the simple fact that I think the Broncos defense with, Von Miller, who looked fabulous, the rookie linebacker, and Brian Dawkins is somehow part of a fountain of youth that he needs to share with somebody, because that guy, 16 years in the league, was all over the field last night.
I went with Denver also. I just Cincinnati, Dalton got beat up. I don't really see Cincinnati doing a whole lot, but yeah, I went with Denver. I don't know. Really don't know about that one.
Yeah, it has the potential to be an eyesore of a game. The other one, a couple other games on the schedule here this week. We have the Texans and Dolphins. I'm taking the Texans. They look really solid against an okay Indianapolis Colts team, and they were opportunistic against Kerry Collins and his mishaps. I really think the Texans are just too much firepower, and after what I saw from the Dolphins last night, I don't think they can stop anybody in the passing game. And Andre Johnson and and Schaub coming to town does not pose well for them. I'm taking the Texans in that one.
Got the Texans as well. Miami had a great opening series last night, but they must have scrapped all them plays after that. They looked horrible after the first series of the game.
Yeah, that's offensive coordinator Brian Daboll, former offensive coordinator of the Cleveland Browns. So we've seen that script before. One series, score a touchdown, all of a sudden they get within the 3-yard line and they throw three fade passes. if they just try to stick their nose in the end zone, they score. So Brian Daboll doing doing his best there in Miami. Here's what I think is the game of the week. One of the games of the week, anyway. We have the San Diego Chargers coming to New England after the big, huge game by Tom Brady last night on Monday Night Football. Record-setting. Unbelievable. Over 500 yards passing. I'll tell you what, I'm taking the Chargers in this because I think the Chargers' defense is amazing. They are long. They're athletic. They're fast. And they're going to get at Tom Brady. It's just going to happen. I think Kaysan and everybody they have in the secondary there can hold up against those receivers. I'm taking the Chargers in a close one in Foxborough.
Yeah, Chargers' defense has improved, but I went with New England here. Brady just has too many weapons. Could be a shootout, though. Rivers can put some points up as well. Could be a good battle.
Yeah, Rivers, I'm telling you, I think he's going to be MVP talk. I think that this guy is finally going to break the mold. He's been kind of in San Diego, and they've won a lot of football games. He just hasn't got a lot of notoriety, I don't think. So I think this is a chance for Philip Rivers really to kind of make a statement for not only himself and also the Chargers. They've been off the slow starts year after year. They finally get off the schneid, win week one. I think they continue heading to New England. It'll be interesting. I think it's going to be a great game, though. Another great game, Michael Vick heading back to Atlanta this week to take on his former team, the Atlanta Falcons. Atlanta didn't show me much. I thought that their defense would be much improved. It doesn't look like that's the case at all, even with the addition of Ray Edwards on that defensive line. They still have to address some issues with secondary, which obviously they did not do in the offseason. This has a potential to be a shootout in the fast track in Atlanta. I'm taking Eagles. Michael Vick, too much firepower, and LeSean McCoy looks the part. I think Andy Reid is going to have to call running plays. You got a guy like that in the backfield, Andy Reid is going to call more running plays maybe than he has in quite a long time. I'm taking the Eagles in what could be a very high-scoring game.
I had some trouble with that when I went back and forth a little bit. I took Atlanta just because they don't lose at home. They like that track. They seem like they play better there. And Matty Ice gets it done in the end. That's the way I went with it.
Right on. Now we got the Monday night game. Not the most appealing Monday night game on the schedule this season. You have the St. Louis Rams heading to the Meadowlands to take on a beat-up Giants team. Heck, the Rams are beat-up, really, in this case. Sam Bradford's got a hand issue. Steven Jackson, the same quad that put him out some games last season, seems to be bothering him again. And also, their utility guy, Danny Amendola, looks to be out for the season with an elbow injury. But you know what? With all that being said, I think Bradford's going to play. They still got Cadillac Williams, I believe, is who they picked up as their backup running back. Cornell Williams, excuse me. I think the Rams find a way to eke this thing out against the Giants.
I went with the Giants. Like you said, the Rams are pretty beat up. The Giants have a few guys out too, but most of them guys are on the defensive side. I don't think St. Louis has enough firepower. Giants get by and ugly, low-scoring game, I think.
Yeah, I said not the most thrilling Monday night game on the schedule, no doubt about it. Way, Sean, those are our Pigskin Pick'ems tonight here on Unsigned. Hey, thanks for calling in, man. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks, Ryan.
Hey, no problem, man. Bye. Take care. Those are the Pigskin Pick'ems here on the Unsigned Show. Again, my name is Ryan. Thanks for hanging out with me. And if you'd like to chime in on the Pigskin Pick'ems or anything else for that matter tonight, give us a call, 724-444-7444. Caller ID is 939-64-POUND. PIN number is 1 and pound. And I want to run down the games real quick. We kind of touched on them a little bit. I want to give you some detail on these games. Bengals-Browns, again, 27-17, the Browns. Sloppy ball game. Everyone knows I make no bones about it. I've been a Browns fan all my life. They had 10 penalties in the first half. That is not going to get it done. Dropping Colt McCoy back 40 times to pass the ball when you have issues on the offensive line. Essentially two rookies at left and right guard. Hillis only gets 76 carries. One carry when they're inside the five-yard line. Really? Peyton Hillis gets one carry inside the five-yard line. Then they throw two fade route passes to receivers, unproven receivers at that. Run Peyton Hillis. That's what I would do. Lions, Buccaneers, again, as I mentioned, Lions coming to Tampa and getting a win. That front seven looked the part. They stonewalled the Buccaneers running attack, LeGarrette Blount included. Final score, Lions 27, Tampa 20. The Bills, Chiefs, this was from the get-go, a blowout. Chiefs all over KC, 41-7. And a guy who just goes about his business, Fred Jackson, running the ball with purpose, 112 yards on the ground against KC. Again, 41-7. Falcons, Bears. The Bears' defense was lights out. Mike Martin, his offense, led by Jay Cutler. Matt Forte was efficient. Forte, 68 yards rushing, 90 yards receiving. Cutler over 300 yards passing. Da, Bears. 30-12. Titans, Jaguars in a slop fest of a game, but you know what? The Jaguars have one thing. Even after cutting their quarterback 6 days before the season, they got MJD, Pocket Hercules, Maurice Jones-Drew, who carried the load with 97 yards and a touchdown. The Titans riddled with offseason issues with Chris Johnson. They finally give him a $50-plus million contract, and they hand the ball off to him nine times. Wah-wah? Hey, we're paying you over $50 million to willing to touch the ball nine times. Good job, Titans. Eagles, Rams. Again, Rams get banged up, and the Eagles, again, too much firepower. LeSean McCoy gets 122 yards on the ground. DeSean Jackson, 102 yards receiving. That's a dangerous 1-2 punch. We didn't even mention Michael Vick. How about that? Colts, Texans. Again, it was scary Collins, not Kerry Collins. Fumbles, interceptions, poor reads. It was a disaster for the Colts. Somebody on that team has got to step up. You know, all week they've been pretty much disrespected. They can't win. They can't win without Manning. They can't win without Manning. I thought that this someone on this team, a veteran team, guys who've been together for a while, would come up and say, you know what, we can win without Manning. Turns out, ooh, they look bad. 34-7. Texans get off the schneid and get off to a big win in that division. Steelers, Ravens. Again, the Ravens, Ray Rice, first play of the game, 37 yards from scrimmage, rush to the left against the Steelers defense. When the last time you saw that? This, again, what I've been saying, you know, over a year, even back in the World Series, or not the World Series, even the Super Bowl back in February, I said the Steelers are an aging team, and they were manhandled by the Ravens. Helote Nata, the defensive tackle, a guy the Browns passed on, by the way, keynote there as a Browns fan. We passed on that defensive tackle. That dude was pushing the pocket and disrupting plays. might be one of the best defensive tackles in the game right now. Joe Flacco, 3 touchdown passes. Big Ben and company had 7 turnovers in the game. Big Ben, hey, somebody should let him know that Ed Reed plays for the Ravens, not the Steelers. Vikings, Chargers. The purple-suited Vikings head to San Diego and led by Donovan McNabb. His first pass in a Vikings uniform is picked off and turns into an easy 7 points for the Chargers. McNabb ends the game with a total of 39 yards passing. Ouch. Ugly, ugly, ugly game for the Vikings. Phillip Rivers, 335 yards, 2 touchdowns. The offensive attack of Matthews and Tolbert coming out of the backfield. Vincent Jackson stretching the field. San Diego defense bottled up AP for the most part. Yeah, he had 98 yards, but you know what? They made him very one-dimensional. The Chargers get a win, 24-17. Seahawks, 49ers, 33-17. This was a 19-17 ball game, and then Ted Ginn Jr., formerly of the Ohio State Buckeyes, returns a punt and a kickoff within 1 minute of one another. So this game went from a close game to a 33-17 win for the 49ers, just like that. Giants, Redskins, Rex Grossman. The project's looking pretty good for Shanahan. The Redskins jump all over their division rivals, 28-14. Tim Hightower for the Redskins, again, really flourishing in that Shanahan system. Peyton Manning in the injury list, you know, Eli Manning for the Giants. Again, that injury list keeps growing. They have issues now with Hakeem Nicks, I believe, as well. Now, keep this in mind. Eli Manning led all quarterbacks last year with interceptions thrown and fumbles. Giants fans are not going to be happy with another 500 season. That seat for Tom Coughlin is getting warm in New York. Panthers, Cardinals. Wow. All I can say is wow. Cam Newton getting his first start, this year's number one pick in the draft. Goes 422 yards, 2 touchdowns, and ran for another. The downside, they lost the game. A classic showing, a classic debut by Cam Newton. But again, the downside is this is probably the best Carolina can play, and they lost the game. I think that Cam Newton has a skill set to be a Pro Bowl quarterback in the NFL. He's got all the skill sets. He proved it Sunday. I've trashed him a little bit, and he's got Steve Smith to throw the ball to, still a very, very reliable source at wide receiver. The Carolina Panthers lean on Chris Beanie-Wells for 90 yards on the ground and a touchdown. He also catches 4 passes out of the backfield. Cobb, getting his first start with the Arizona Cardinals, actually had a pretty decent game. I think as he gets more comfortable, Arizona has a lot of speed on the outside. Larry Fitzgerald is going to be his best friend when it's all said and done. Now, Sunday night, Cowboys, Jets. Oh, yikes. I picked the Cowboys in this game, as everybody knows. I'm not a Cowboys fan. I just thought they could go and steal one. They have a score. They have the ball in the 5-yard line, inside the 5-yard line. Tony Romo fumbles on a 3rd down play. Jets march down the field and score. Dallas gets the ball back. Romo throws an interception to the best corner in football. Darrell Revis returns at 40 yards. Jets score again. Oh, don't forget about the block punt that was ran in for a touchdown as well. A buffet of mistakes from Dallas in late game situation. The Tony Romo turnover spread. Thank you. May I have one piece of that from the buffet, please? What is that? Tony Romo turnover? Yes, it is. Jets score 17 in the fourth quarter to win 27-14. Here's a side story I would like to bring up. Jets quarterback Mark Sanchez, whose father was a fireman for over 34 years in California, to mark the 10th anniversary of 9/11, he wanted to launch a New York a fire department shirt for the New York that pays tribute to the brave first responders like his father who lost their lives on 9/11. And all proceeds on these shirts go towards supporting widowed family members of rescue workers and an important, important cause for him as well as the people involved. I think that is a great side story. I wanted to bring that up. Yes, the unsigned clap of the night right there. Mark Sanchez, you know, really a good cause. All the proceeds for these shirts are going to the widows and their families of 9/11. I thought that was worth mentioning on the show tonight. Now we head into Monday night. We have the Patriots. Tom Brady lighting him up, 517 yards, 4 touchdown passes, almost 1,000 total yards in this game. 5th most all-time in yards for a single game. Chad Henne didn't have himself a bad game either, 416 yards. But again, not a whole lot of defense in this game. But again, you know, you have the Patriots, 38-24. And a game that was probably the sloppiest game, not excluding the Browns-Bengals game, and a back-to-back doubleheader on Monday night. Sloppy game. packed with a lot of penalties. I think the refs might have been on a pitch count. I think they had to ice their shoulders down in this game. There were so many penalties in this game. It's a good thing they weren't on a pitch count. Broncos did not look good. Turnovers in key spots, fumbles on both sides. Really a sloppy game. It was pouring rain. One note that comes out of this game, Sebastian Janikowski of the Oakland Raiders ties an NFL record with a 63-yard field goal at the end of the first half. This guy was kicking 70-yard field goals in pregame. Raiders win 23-20. How important was that 63-yarder? Very, very good stuff. All right, man, a lot of football, like I said. You know, we're going to take a step back, take a deep breath. We're going to go off the path. This is where we talk about non-sports-related topics. Okay? We do movies, music.
Bring me a challenge, somebody.
I'll bring you a challenge. Let's do this. How about we go off the path? Pearl Jam, new documentary film, is going to be in select theaters next week. Now, Pearl Jam 20 soundtrack is a career-spanning set, live recordings, demos, and unreleased material that emulates the band's creative process and showcases their awe-inspiring power as a live act. The sets kicks off with a handful of live recordings and classic tunes from the album 10. It also goes deeper into Temple of the Dog demos. Also, a gorgeous cover, which I heard today, of Mother Love Bone's Crown of Thorns. Amazing rendition of that song, and also previously unheard recordings of Acoustic Number One and highlights from their appearance of MTV Unplugged and Saturday Night Live. The Pearl Jam 20 soundtrack will be in store September the 20th, and you can stream it in its entirety at rollingstone.com. I suggest that you do that. Very, very good listen. The anniversary celebration that includes Cameron Crowe from Rolling Stones directing a documentary film. And also they did a festival that was held Labor Day weekend in Wisconsin. Pearl Jam 20 will be available today. You can order it on the band's website. And also the documentary soundtrack and the book is available September the 20th next week. Also available for pre-order on the band's website. So definitely check that out. Now, before last night's premiere of VH1 documentary Planet Rock, The Story of Hip-Hop and Crack Generation. You heard me right. The film's narrator and executive producer is Ice-T. This is a quote from Ice-T. I was approached by VH1 because they knew I was familiar, as he told Rolling Stone. He knew that I had access to all the rappers and that they would actually accept my phone calls, as he laughed. The movie, which focuses on several of the biggest names in hip-hop, how they moved from the crack game to the rap game. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It also features Snoop Dogg, Cypress Hill's Be Real, and the Wu-Tang Clan's The RZA. The film, 83 minutes in runtime, goes far beyond the places where drugs and music collide. Unblinking shots of corpses being dragged from homes, former prostitutes detailing their inner monologues that drove them to the streets of L.A. This film features few choice rants about the decaying state of hip-hop from around 1983 and onward. Ice-T said, I got a word I use in my life right now, which is important, he said. Right now, the word is important. At my age, I'm not doing anything that I don't think is important. I'm not doing pop shit. I don't like pop shit. I'm not trying to be popular. This film is important. That's the kind of work I'm doing for the rest of my way out. Planet Rock, The Story of Hip-Hop and the Crack Generation premieres on VH1 Sunday, September the 18th at 10 p.m. And when I first read this article, I was like, I don't know if I really want to watch it. Then after reading some of the article and some of the quotes by Ice-T, this is probably going to be a very, very real telling story of what happened in the 80s and 90s with hip-hop and where it's gone today. I look forward to seeing that documentary. And if anybody has, you know, any comments about that or, you know, after they see it, feel free to get a hold of me at Ryan_unsigned on Twitter. Definitely like to hear your comments about the film. Moving on tonight here on Unsigned, the Black Eyed Peas put on a rocking benefit concert. Yes, they did. Saturday, they did this last Saturday for Transformers star Josh Domahel. His hometown was flooded in Minot, North Dakota. Black Eyed Peas raised a whopping $1.3 million in flood relief for rebuilding efforts. Kudos to them. This is what a band that everyone thought was really taking a break. They come together for a good cause. It's very, very good to see. Now, here's something that I mentioned a couple weeks ago that I wanted to get into. This is Charlie Sheen, the roast of Charlie Sheen, none other than Charlie Sheen getting roasted. Here's the people that are going to be involved with this roast. It was recorded this past weekend. TV legend, previous roaster William Shatner will be leading the way. He will be joined by Kate Walsh, John Lovitz, Patrick O'Neill, and Amy Schumer. And if that wasn't enough, Slash is also going to make a special appearance at the roast. The roast master is Seth MacFarlane. Also, Iron Mike Tyson is going to be a part of the roast as well. And your main roasters that we've come to know and love, Jeffrey Ross, Steve-O from Jackass, will also be on hand. The show was recorded again this past Saturday night and will air Monday, September the 19th on Comedy Central. This is really sure to be a classic roast. There's no doubt about it. You definitely want to set your DVR. The bleep track will definitely be going. This will be in full effect. Charlie Sheen.
Battle cry, I'm a deadly and dangerous secret and silent soldiers.
Yes, he is. And coincidentally enough, this is going to take place on the premiere of Two and a Half Men on NBC, a show that Charlie Sheen used to be on.
Bring me a challenge, somebody.
He is challenging Two and a Half Men. I think it's classic TV, a classic move by Charlie Sheen. It's going to be very, very interesting, and I'm sure it's going to be a laugh ride. Moving on to Off the Path, the box office. We do this every week on the show. Top 10 movies at the box office. We start from number 10. We work our way up to number 1. Spy Kids, All the Time in the World at number 10. Our Idiot Brother at $2.6 million at number 9. Apollo 18 at $2.8 million. Shark Knight 3D, $3.4 million. Rise of the Planet of the Apes, still hanging in the top 10 at $3.8 million. Columbiana, $3.9 million. The movie The Debt, which looks very good, $4.9 million. The movie Warrior at $5.2 million. The movie The Help, which is getting very good reviews, $8.9 million. Number one movie at the box office this weekend, Contagion, which I heard is a thriller of a movie. I look forward to seeing it here very shortly. $22.4 million, rounding out number one at the box office this week. That concludes our edition of Off the Path. Again, my name is Ryan. Thanks for hanging out with me. We covered a lot tonight, and you know what? We're going to keep covering some more stuff. We've got college football top 25 to cover tonight. And we'll start with number 25. Number 25, Mississippi State, 34 against number 21, Auburn, who scores 41. A battle of two great running backs in this one. Ballard from Mississippi State puts 135 yards and a touchdown on the ground. And Auburn's Dyer with 150 yards on the ground. This was a classic high-scoring SEC matchup. Auburn wins 41-34 over Mississippi State. Number 24, Texas, was in a battle against BYU. Mack Brown's Longhorns suffering through some quarterback issues and injury. They tough out an ugly win at home over BYU, 17-16. Number 23, TCU taking on Air Force. TCU scores 35, Air Force 19, and really a bounce-back game for TCU after that upset from Baylor. The Horned Frogs, even after losing Andy Dalton and a lot of other guys, they still have a lot of talent on both sides of the football. Don't sleep on those Horned Frogs. They're a good ball club. Arizona State, number 22 in the country, taking on the Missouri Tigers. Now, Arizona State, coincidentally enough, was not ranked. They are ranked now at number 22. Missouri Tigers, remember last week, they struggled against Miami of Ohio. They end up losing this game in overtime. Arizona State wins 37-30 in a thriller. The Tigers had high hopes this year, and that was a really disappointing loss for those Missouri Tigers. South Florida, 37, Ball State, 7. South Florida, number 20 in the country. Number 18, West Virginia, 55, Norfolk State, 12. Not much of a contest there. Number 17, Ohio State, taking on Toledo. Holy Toledo, Buckeyes! That was a game Ohio State really should have lost. Somehow they found a way to win in ugly fashion. They head to Miami to take on the U this week, the Canes. That's going to be a tough ballgame. They actually had a bye week this week, Miami did, and Ohio State better clear some things up on both sides of the football or they are going to get whooped on by Miami. Miami's got a lot of talent, a lot of speed. Ohio State did not look the part. Hopefully this is a wake-up call. Ohio State wins the game 27-22. They did not look good. Number 16, Florida. Scoring 39, taking on UAB. The Gators have put up the chomp on two teams in 2 weeks, allowing 0 points in two games. Gators looking tough. Number 15, Michigan State, 44. Florida Atlantic, 0. Again, not much of a contest. A lot of cream puff games on the schedule this week. Number 14, Arkansas, 52, taking on New Mexico State. They put up 3 points. Congratulations, New Mexico State. You found a way to put points up against Arkansas. Arkansas is a tough ball club. Wouldn't surprise me if they came out of the SEC. Number 13, Virginia Tech, 17, East Carolina, 10. Not sure if anyone saw this or not, but East Carolina's coach talking about cats and dogs. All I can say is that the Prozac is not working for this man anymore. Virginia Tech looking the part, 17, beating East Carolina, who scored 10. Number 12, the Oregon Ducks dropped 69 on Nevada. Nevada comes up with 20 points, 69-20. Thomas, the quarterback for the Ducks, throws 6 touchdown passes. Unbelievable. Number 11, the South Carolina Gamecocks taking on the Georgia Bulldogs. This is really a high-scoring game. The game, the Cox come at it. The old ball coach was Steve Spurrier, led by running back Marcus Lattimore, who ran 176 yards. Tips the Bulldogs water bowl over and takes a hold of the SEC East, well, at least for now. Georgia, even if they would have been wearing their Mighty Morphin Power Ranger outfits, it is not going to keep Georgia fans happy. That seat is getting hot in Georgia. They start 0-2. And the Gamecocks win 45-42 over those Bulldogs. Number 10, Nebraska taking on Fresno State. I tell you what, Nebraska looks really good. They win this game 42-29. Their first year in the Big Ten, they have a dual-threat quarterback. Taylor Martinez goes for 219 yards passing with a touchdown and 166 yards running with 2 touchdowns. Dual-threat quarterback, Nebraska looks very tough. They have a nice defense, too. Number 8, Oklahoma State versus Arizona. A lot of yards on this one for Arizona. They just could not find a way to score against Oklahoma State. 37-14, Oklahoma State. Number 7, the Wisconsin Badgers taking on Oregon State. And just like the Honey Badger, the Wisconsin Badgers were all over the Oregon Beavers. This matchup against Nebraska coming up in a couple weeks at Camp Randall in Wisconsin is going to be a good one. That is going to be a welcome to the Big Ten moment, I think, for Nebraska. I think Wisconsin is going to roll big time in that ballgame. Number 6, Stanford taking on Duke, 44-14. Andrew Luck again looks the part, 20 for 28 passing, 4 touchdown passes, 290 yards. I like Stanford. This is a team. I think they're the best team in the Pac-12, even better than Oregon. I think they're going to win the Pac-12 this year. Number 5, Florida State, 62 points against Charleston, scoring 10. Not much of a contest. Again, another big win against really not that good of a team. Again, a lot of cupcakes on the schedule. But next week, here we go. Number 1, the Boomer Sooners, Oklahoma, number 1 in the country, coming to Tallahassee. We talked about it last week. This is going to set the tone for college football. It's going to be a good one. But I tell you what, I think the Sooners are going to be big time. I think they're going to roll big time over Florida State. And I think Florida State gets humbled in this one. I think Florida State still wins the ACC, but I think the Sooners stay at number 1. Number 3, LSU against Northwestern State. It is ground and pound for LSU. Whew, what a sight to see, 49-3. What I thought could have been the upset alert, and very well could have been, if not for a couple calls. This is number 2, Alabama taking on Penn State in Happy Valley. The start of the game was perfect for Penn State. They come out with a long drive. They get some points on the board, and then they come out. They force a 3-and-out. Alabama goes for it on a fake punt on 4th and inches, and Alabama gets a great spot in the game. I don't think they got that 4th down. You won't convince me that they got that. That was a great spot by the officials. And then at that point, once Alabama gets that 1st down, they reel off 17 unanswered points. Really took the wind out of the sails of Penn State. They could not bounce back in that game. Alabama, tough ball club. And that is your updated scores of the top 25 in college football. And here's the top 25 as it stands right now. Number 25, Mississippi State. TCU at number 23. And Texas also at number 23. Kind of has a tie there, so you kind of take who you want there at 24. Number 22, Arizona State. Number 21, Auburn. Number 20, South Florida. Baylor at 19. West Virginia at 18. Ohio State dropping a couple spots down to 17 after that performance. No surprise there. Florida moving up a couple spots to number 16. Michigan State moving up from number 17 to 15. Arkansas standing pat. I'm surprised they have not leapfrogged Virginia Tech yet. Look for them to do so soon. Oregon moving up one spot to number 12. Nebraska moving down one spot at number 11. South Carolina jumping them a couple spots at number 10. Texas A&M at number 9. Oklahoma State number 8. Wisconsin number 7. Stanford at 6, Florida State at 5, Boise State, who had a bye week this week, they go to Toledo, the same team that gave the Buckeyes some trouble. Boise State goes to Toledo this week at number 4. Number 3, LSU. Number 2, Alabama. Number 1, of course, Oklahoma, getting 31 votes. Alabama getting 10 votes for number 1. LSU getting 17 votes for number one, but then dropping a spot to number three in the rankings, and Boise State getting 2 votes, staying pat at number 4. Now, here's my dilemma, and this is what I think could happen here in the BCS football, and feel free to chime in on this if you want to. 724-444-7444. Caller ID is 939-64-POUND. The PIN ID number is 1 and pound. Now, in the modern BCS era, this year more than any, I think, we could end up with a very interesting scenario of undefeated teams. Now, you can end up with Oklahoma or Florida State. Either one of those teams could end up undefeated. Alabama and LSU play one another. So, you know, there's a one-loss team. Whoever comes out of the SEC, more than likely Alabama or LSU is going to come out of the SEC. So you have a one-loss SEC team is going to get the national title. They've won the last 5 national titles. There's no reason to think that they won't be an SEC team involved in the national title this year. And you have Boise State at number 4. Again, could run the table. Stanford and the Pac-12 could end up undefeated. Wisconsin in the Big Ten also could end up undefeated. So you have Oklahoma, Boise State, Florida State, Stanford, Wisconsin, all teams potentially that could end up undefeated and your one-loss SEC team. So what do you do about national title this year if you have an undefeated Oklahoma, an undefeated Boise State, an undefeated Stanford, and undefeated Wisconsin? How does that pan out? Mike, your thoughts on the BCS mess if that happens?
I got to be honest with you. I really don't have a clue what they would do.
I think that, I mean, you know, people would be calling for a playoff system. You see these power conferences moving in, Texas A&M wanting to join the SEC, Oklahoma making it known that they're open for anybody. You know, Oklahoma making no bones about it, they would go to the SEC, they would go to the Pac-12, they would join the Pac-10 and renew the rivalry with Nebraska. So, I mean, at that point, you're looking at power conferences. I don't see how the BCS can stay intact if this is to happen. You end up with 4 power conferences. I think a playoff system is in order. That's the age-old talk for another time, I guess. But just to let you know that after this week, the picture starts becoming clear about 3-4 weeks in, where you start end up having, you know, 3-4-5, you know what, you know, 4 or 5 of the top 7 teams in the rankings being undefeated when the season closes. Very interesting stuff in college football. Be an interesting season, no doubt about it. My name is Ryan. This is Unsigned. Thanks for hanging out with me. Hope you're having a good time tonight as much as I am. Still a couple things I want to cover tonight. This is a sad story that broke last Wednesday. And before I get into the story, I want to say this. And one of my followers on Twitter brought this up to me as well. That this story got so little attention, it's a little disturbing. It really is. ESPN, as good as they are, they have their faults as well. We're not really covering this story very well. They were more concerned about Peyton Manning's neck than what happened and the tragedy here in Russia. And if you're not familiar, here's the story. A private jet carrying Russian professional hockey team for its first season crashed shortly after takeoff Wednesday, killing 43 people, including European and former NHL players. One of the worst aviation disasters in sports history. 2 people did survive this accident and are listed in grave critical condition. Out of the 45 people on board, 36 were players, coaches, or team officials. 8 were crew members. The plane apparently struggled to gain altitude and then hit a signal tower before breaking apart over Volga River. That's about 150 miles northeast of Moscow. One of the blue and white plane engines that are charred in a photo you can see sticking out of this river. This is the darkest day in the history of our sport, said Renan Fessel, president of International Ice Hockey Federation. This is not only a Russian tragedy. This roster included players and coaches from 10 different nations. A spectator who saw the crash, it was wobbling in flight. It was clear that something was wrong. A person in the village who saw the crash firsthand. I saw them pulling bodies to the shore. Some of them were still with their seatbelts on. More than 2,000 mourning fans wearing jerseys and scarves waving team flags gathered in the evening outside Lokomotiv's team in Russia. Most carried flowers. Riot police stood guard as fans sang in honor the dead athletes. no altercations with the riot police, just there for security to make sure nothing tragic happened. Like they're, you know, like this story. And again, I really credit the ESPN and some of the other Fox Sports and other ones really not giving this story as much attention. I understand, you know, the September 11th anniversary. I understand, you know, obviously that takes precedent over a tragedy in Russia. I understand that, you know, they want to bring that to the forefront. I'm not saying that they shouldn't have, but this happened last Wednesday. ESPN, Peyton Manning's neck. I didn't hear hardly a word from the mothership, the leading source of sports. Very disappointing. Very, very disappointing on ESPN's lack of coverage when it came to this story. Thoughts and sending positive energy out to the family members of the 43 individuals killed in this flight last Wednesday in Russia. Moving on with happier news tonight, we're going to Major League Baseball. All right. There it is. I got a trigger finger. Major League Baseball recap. Here we go. Pretty much everything has been settled in Major League Baseball. There's a couple interesting things I want to cover as far as what the playoffs are going to look like for you. We'll start with the American League like we always do, the American League East. Now, here's the interesting part of it. Everyone thought, yeah, Yankees, Red Sox, I've been saying it for months and months and months since April that, you know, one of these two teams are going to be the wild card. One's going to win the division. Ha-ha! The Tampa Bay Rays, who have won eight of their last two games, now are only three games out of the wild card spot behind the Boston Red Sox. The Red Sox, who are slumping, they have lost eight of their last 10, five in a row, now find themselves in a battle for the playoffs when they pretty much have been sitting cozy all year long. That's going to be interesting to see how that's going to pan out. Now, the American League Central, that's pretty much sewn up. The Indians and White Sox have they're making their vacation plans, I guess, at this point. The Tigers with an 11.5 game lead. It's amazing. Two or three weeks ago, the Tribe was only about four or five, six games out. Now, 11.5 games out. Justin Verlander has been phenomenal, the pitcher for the Detroit Tigers. They look to be a tough out when it comes to playoff time. Also, the Texas Rangers, they're only three games up on the Los Angeles Angels. I tell you what, I give the Angels credit. They have been scrappy all year, great pitching. If they get some hitting, they'd be a really tough ball club. And they're right there in that wild card talk as well. Don't think that they aren't. National League. The National League looks to be pretty much set. You have the Philadelphia Phillies, best record in baseball. And then you have the Atlanta Braves. Even though they're 12 games back, they still won 84 games already. They look to be their wild card. You have the Brewers, 6.5 games up. I don't see St. Louis making up 6.5 games with this little time left in the season. Brewers, again, looking good, playing .500 baseball down the stretch. But again, they pretty much had the division sewn up for quite some time now. And the National League West, the San Francisco Giants, last year's champion of the World Series, they're going to be watching it from their couch this year. I'm sure Brian Wilson, maybe he'll shave his beard. I don't know. But they are 8.5 games out in the Arizona Diamondbacks. I tell you what, Kirk Gibson is probably going to get Coach of the Year deservingly so. They are 86-62. They have won 8 of their last 10. They can hit. They can pitch. Diamondbacks are going to be a scary team come playoff time in Major League Baseball. Now, here's a good story for you. Before, you know, remember when you used to go to the ball games? You know, you'd go with your family, whatever, you know, and you go grab yourself a hot dog with some mustard and you get yourself a cold drink on a hot summer day and you're heading to your seat. Well, if you're at Wrigley Field, you may want to check that. You may want to scratch those lunch munchie reservations. Black slime was found on the ice machine at the clubhouse concession stand by city health inspectors. Chicago reporters said that out of 35 concessions, inspectors found 20 critical violations in 9 different booths. 3 booths were shut down after failing their inspection. A staggering 57% of Wrigley Field concession stands had food violations. Want some sausage? How about an Italian sausage? Held at the right temperature for a couple hours. They ended up throwing away 24 pounds of hot dog, sausage, and hamburgers that had to be thrown away from 5 different concession areas, according to city inspection results. What would Harry Carey say?
Hi, this is Eric Carey here. I better not check out the Italian sausage. It's going to give you a heartburn, and it might give you a case of the runs. Here's the seventh inning stretch at Wrigley. Harry Carey here. That's my Harry Carey impression. It's probably not very good, but hey. But well, I'll tell you what, one other side story, Monday Night Football, and I wanted to bring this up. If you're watching the Patriots game against the Dolphins, you may have heard old Ron Jaworski say the word shit on air, which, you know, everyone's like, oh, no, he said the word shit. And it was really not really taken out of context. He wasn't saying it bad. It wasn't, you know, something that he wasn't saying it directly towards someone. It was really a nonchalant kind of thing. It was almost like him and John Gruden forgot that they were on national TV, and they're just kind of shooting the breeze on national TV. And, you know, Jaworski, you know, lets the word slip. He says, that one Chad Henne would love to have back, Jaworski said. He knew he had a one-on-one matchup going down the right sideline. Shit, you got to get rid of the ball just a split second quicker. You know, that was the context it was in. And there was a clip that I was thinking about showing, but it's edited out. And that's one, you know, good thing about being here on the podcast. I mean, we don't, you know, do a whole lot of swearing on the show, and I'm not going to use the word in excess. But, you know, they were like, we bleeped the word to make it safe for viewing. So that's why I didn't play it, because I didn't want to play it. You know, it wasn't taken out of context. There was no malcontent. And Ron Jaworski, the professional that he is, once he was aware of what happened, made a quick apology on air as soon as he was aware of it. He wasn't even aware of it. I think someone in the booth let him know, either Mike Tirico or John Gruden was like, hey, you just kind of had a slip there. He made an apology. I thought it was well within standards there. So no harm, no foul. They kind of made a big deal of it on the internet and stuff last night. Yeah, it slipped. It happens. He apologized like a true professional in that type of national broadcast. No harm, no foul, as far as I'm concerned. This has been edited for your viewing pleasure. My name is Ryan. This has been Unsigned. Thanks for hanging out with me today. I had a good time. Hope you did as well. It seems harder to enjoy the finer things in life. Until next time, do so.